Hello everybody, this is Osho Radio. We bring you a program of music from the world of Osho and a part of a discourse by Osho. For 1 hour, you can listen to this program directly or put it on your mobile phone or your computer. For the next hour, just relax and enjoy a new program of Osho Radio.
Krishna, Krishna, Jai Jai.
Krishna.
The discourse tonight is from the series Ancient Music in the Pines, number 3. It's a series about Zen. The lecture is very beautiful. It is about meditation, and Osho says, meditation is a flower, and compassion is its fragrance. So, compassion is the subject tonight. Enjoy!
Meditation is a flower, and compassion its fragrance. Exactly like that it happens. The flower blooms, and the fragrance spreads in all directions, in the winds, to be carried to the very ends of earth. But the basic thing is the blooming of the flower. Man is also carrying a potentiality of flowering within him. Until and unless the inner being of man flowers, the fragrance of compassion is not possible. Compassion cannot be practiced. It is not a discipline. You cannot manage it. it is beyond you. If you meditate, suddenly one day you become aware of a new phenomenon, absolutely strange, that from your being compassion is flowing towards the whole of existence, undirected, unaddressed. It is moving to the very ends of existence. Without meditation, the same energy remains passion. With meditation, the same energy becomes compassion. Passion and compassion are not two energies. It is this one and the same energy. Once it passes through meditation, it is transformed, transfigured. It becomes qualitatively different. Passion moves downwards. Compassion moves upwards. Passion moves through desire. Compassion moves through desirelessness. Passion is an occupation to forget the miseries in which you live. Compassion is a celebration. Compassion is a dance of attainment, of fulfillment. You are so fulfilled that you can share. Now there is nothing left. You have attained the destiny that you were carrying for a millennia within you, like an unflowered potentiality, just a bud. Now it has flowered, is dancing. You have attained. You are fulfilled. There is no more to attain, nowhere to go, nothing to do. Now what will happen to the energy? You start sharing. The same energy that was moving through the dark alleys of passion now moves with light rays upwards, uncontaminated by any desire, uncontaminated by any conditioning, pure, uncorrupted by any motivation. Hence I call it fragrance. The flower is limited, but not the fragrance. The flower has limitations. It is rooted somewhere in bondage. But fragrance has no bondage. It simply moves, rides on the winds, with no moorings in the earth. Meditation is a flower. It has roots. It exists in you. Once it happens, compassion is not rooted. It simply moves, goes on moving. Buddha has disappeared, but not his compassion. The flower will die sooner or later. It is part of earth, and the dust will return unto dust. But the fragrance that has been released will remain forever and forever. Buddha is gone, Jesus is gone, but not their fragrance. Their compassion still continues. And whoever is open to their compassion will immediately feel its impact, will be moved by it, will be taken on a new journey, on a new pilgrimage. Compassion is not limited with the flower. It comes from the flower, but it is not of the flower. It comes through the flower. The flower is just a passage, but it comes really from the beyond. It cannot come without the flower. The flower is a necessary stage, but it doesn't belong to the flower. Once the flower has bloomed, compassion is released. This insistence, this emphasis has to be deeply understood, because if you miss the point, you can start practicing compassion. Then that is not real fragrance. A practiced compassion is just the same passion in new names. It is the same desire contaminated, motivation corrupted energy. And it can become very dangerous to other people, because in the name of compassion, you can destroy. In the name of compassion, you can make prisoners of other people. In the name of compassion, you can create bondage. It is not compassion. And if you practice it, you are being artificial, formal, in fact, a hypocrite. The first thing to be remembered continuously is compassion cannot be practiced. It is this point where all the followers of all the great religious teachers have missed. Buddha attained to compassion through meditation. Now Buddhists go on practicing compassion. Jesus attained to compassion through meditation. But Christians, the Christian missionaries, go on trying love, compassion, service to humanity. But their compassion has proved a very destructive force in the world. Their compassion has created only wars. And their compassion has destroyed millions of people. They end up in deep imprisonments. Compassion frees you, gives you freedom. But that compassion has to come only through meditation. There is no other way to it. Buddha has said that compassion is a byproduct, a consequence. You cannot catch hold of the consequence directly. You have to move. You have to produce the cause and the effect follows. So if you really want to understand what compassion is, you have to understand what meditation is. Forget all about compassion. It comes on its own accord. Try to understand what meditation is. Compassion can become a criterion whether the meditation was right or not. If the meditation has been right, compassion is bound to come. It's natural. It follows like a shadow. If the meditation has been wrong, then compassion will not follow. So compassion can work as a criterion whether the meditation has been really right or not. Even a meditation can be wrong. People have a wrong notion that all meditations are right. It is not so. Meditations can be wrong. For example, any meditation that leads you deep into concentration is wrong. It will not result into compassion. You will become more and more closed rather than becoming open. If you narrow down your consciousness, concentrate on something, and you exclude the whole of existence, and you become one-pointed, it will create more and more tension in you. Hence the word attention. It means at tension. Concentration, the very sound of the word, gives you a feeling of tenseness. Concentration has its uses, but it is not meditation. In a scientific work, in a scientific research, in the science lab, you need concentration. You have to concentrate on one problem by excluding everything else. So much so that you almost become unmindful of the remaining world. The only problem that you are consenting upon is your world. That's why scientists become absent-minded. People who concentrate too much always become absent-minded, because they don't know how to remain open to the whole world. I was reading one anecdote. I have brought a frog, said a scientist, a professor of zoology, beaming at his class, fresh from the pond, in order that we might study its outer appearance and later dissect it. He carefully unwrapped the package he carried, and inside was a neatly prepared ham sandwich. The good professor looked at it with astonishment. "Odd," he said, "I distinctly remember having eaten my lunch." That goes on happening to scientists. They become one-pointed, and their whole mind becomes narrow. Of course, a narrow mind has its use. It becomes more penetrating. It becomes like a sharp needle. It hits exactly the right point, but it misses the great life that surrounds you. A Buddha is not a man of concentration. He is a man of awareness. He has not been trying to narrow down his consciousness. On the contrary, he has been trying to drop all the barriers so that he becomes totally available to existence. Watch, existence is simultaneous. I am speaking here. The traffic noise is simultaneous. The train, the birds, the wind blowing through the trees. In this moment, the whole of existence converges. you listening to me, I speaking to you, and millions of things going on. It is tremendously rich. Concentration makes you one-pointed at a very great cost. 99% of life is discarded. If you are solving a mathematical problem, you cannot listen to the words. They will be a distraction. Children playing around, dogs barking in the street, they will be a distraction. The wife working in the kitchen, washing the plates will be a distraction. Because of concentration, people have tried to escape from life, to go to the Himalayas, to go to a cave, remain isolated, so that you can concentrate on God. God is not an object. God is this wholeness of existence, this moment. God is the totality. That's why science will never be able to know God. The very method of science is concentration. And because of that method, science can never know God. It can know more and more minute details. First, the molecule was thought to be the last particle. Then it was divided. Then even a tinier part, atom, was known. Then concentration divided that also. Now electrons, protons, neutrons, sooner or later they are also going to be divided. Science goes on from the smaller to the smaller. The bigger, the vast, is completely forgotten. The whole is completely forgotten for the part. Science can never know God because of concentration. So when people come to me and they say, teach Bhagwan, teach us concentration, we want to know God, I'm simply puzzled. They have not understood the basic of the search. Science is one-pointed. The search is objective. Religion is simultaneity. The object is the whole. The total. To know the total, that is to know God, you will have to have a consciousness which is open from everywhere, not confined, not standing in a window. Otherwise the frame of the window will become the frame of existence. Just standing under the sun in the open sky, that is what meditation is. Meditation has no frame. It is not a window. It is not a door. Meditation is not concentration. It is not attention. Meditation is awareness. So what to do? Repeating a mantra, doing transcendental meditation is not going to help. Transcendental meditation has become very, very important in America because of the objective approach, because of the scientific mind. Now, that is the only meditation on which scientific research work is being done. Because that is the only meditation upon which scientific work can be done.
It is exactly concentration and not meditation. It is comprehensible for the scientific mind. In the universities, in the science laboratories, in psychological research work, much is being done about TM. Because it is not meditation. It is a concentration, a method of concentration. It falls under the same category as scientific concentration. There is a link between the two. But it has nothing to do with meditation. Meditation is so vast, so tremendously infinite, no scientific research is possible. Only compassion will show whether the man has achieved or not. Alpha waves won't be of much help. They are still of the mind. And meditation is not of the mind. It is something beyond. So let me tell you a few basic things. One, meditation is not concentration but relaxation. One simply relaxes. One simply relaxes into oneself. The more you relax, the more you feel yourself open, vulnerable. The more you relax, the more you are less rigid. You become more flexible. And suddenly, existence starts penetrating you. You are no more like a rock. You have openings. Relaxation means falling into such a state, allowing yourself to fall into such a state where you are not doing anything. Because if you are doing something, tension will continue. It is a state of non-doing. You simply relax. And you enjoy the feeling of relaxation. If you relax into yourself, just close your eyes, listen to all that is happening all around. No need to feel it as distraction. The moment you feel it is a distraction, you are denying God. This moment God has come to you as a bird. Don't deny. He has knocked you. As a bird. The next moment he has come as a dog and barking. Or as a child crying and weeping. Or as a madman laughing. Don't deny, don't reject, accept. Because if you deny, you will become tense. All denials create tension. Accept. If you want to relax, acceptance is the way. Accept whatsoever is happening all around. Let it become an organic whole. It is. You may know, you may not know. Everything is interrelated. These words, these trees, this sky, this sun, this earth, you, me, all are related. It is an organic unity. If the sun disappears, the trees will disappear. If the trees disappear, the birds will disappear. If the words and trees disappear, you cannot be here. You will disappear. It is an ecology. Everything is related deep with each other. So don't deny anything, because the moment you deny, you are denying something in you. If you deny these singing birds, then something in you is denied. Once it happened, it was spring, the weather was delightful, and I was sitting on a park bench. I enjoyed the spring, the birds, and the air, and the sun. I listened to the melodious chirping of numerous birds. A stranger was also sitting on the same bench. I turned to him and said to him, "Is not the music of the birds delightful?" But he must have been a religious man. He was doing some mantra. He felt disturbed. He felt as if I interfered. He scowled and said, "How the devil can I hear what you are saying over the damned noise of those stupid birds?" But if you deny, reject, if you feel distracted, if you feel angry, you are rejecting something within you. Just listen again to the birds without any feeling of distraction, anger. And suddenly you will see the bird within you responds. Then those words are not there as strangers, intruders. Suddenly the whole existence becomes a family. It is. And I call that man religious who has come to understand that the whole existence is a family. He may not go to any church, and he may not worship in any temple, and he may not pray at any mosque or gurudwara. That doesn't matter. That is almost irrelevant. If you do good, if you don't do, that is even better. But one who has understood the organic unity of existence is constantly in the temple, is constantly facing the sacred and the divine.
We are coming to the end of this program. You heard a lot of wonderful music tonight. Music from the world of Osho. Music made by Prem Joshua, Deva Premal, Pushkar, Devakant, and the last number is by Shastro. Have a good week, everybody. Take care, and until the next time. Namaste.